workshop, not a lecture. So, you know, that's, but nobody panic. I'm not going to force you to do something that you don't want to do unless you're a student that I've had already. No. So, thank you guys for coming today. Kind of, I had worked on my workshop before, you know, the national started, obviously. And then as I was judging competition, I went, throw it away. I'm seeing the same things over and over and over again that I really want students to learn. And kind of, we're all right here. Like, I feel like I'm doing this. That I really want them to learn that are not just important mechanics of theater, but really kind of digs down to the bottom of the purpose of what we're doing and how we do it most effectively. So the beauty of this room, because like, well, okay, not you, but these, you will be soon though, are my children, right, at Welch. And so you guys know this. So help us out. Why is theater so important? Come on. On the spot, why is theater so important? Yes? You took an intake of air?
I know, as per usual. Well, one, because God is a creator. And so
we are creative because God is a creator. So art is inside of us. It is not this weird, unholy thing we do. Art is important. God ordained. He created it. Oh, I'm so glad he did. Oh, go ahead. What else? Anything else you want to say?
Well, no, I was just going to say because he imbued in us his creativity.
Absolutely. Why else is theater important?
It's a way to communicate stories and truth to
people. It is a way to communicate stories and truth. And what better story to tell than stories that lead people to Christ? What else? Go ahead, Alejandro. You look like you have something to say. Oh, that was yours. She took yours. People forget that, you know, music, we're kind of in a culture where people are like, oh, music, it's so emotional, it's so powerful. We do music in worship, and that is, you know, that's the thing. But people forget that story is really where it started. So although formal theater, of course, began with the Greeks and, you know, the tragedy competitions and things like that and the satyr plays, but the actual origins of theater, you know, scholars are saying is simply storytelling, oral tradition, those kinds of things. So you think about sermons, right? Like teaching people, these things are theatrical. Not in the fake and performance way, which we're going to get to in just a minute, but in the presenting sort of way. They even talk about like early church rituals and things like that. That's also part of kind of where they say formal theater began to grow from these things, because they figured out that being able to enact something, right, these rituals, these storytellers, really kind of taught the people, you know, these very important truths. Now, obviously, you go to the movies and you see things that you're like, that didn't point anybody to Jesus. So, you know, it is our job for the sacred not to be desecrated, right? It's our job to bring back that truth, beauty, and goodness. And that is what is so wonderful about this convention and about the drama competition. What you're doing is more important than Vertical 3. You know, you're in there and I'm feeling convicted by plays that I'm seeing you all perform. And it's just a powerful, your church was. It's amazing the things we can teach people. Someone can stand up and tell you, but if I show you, right, you connect emotionally, you see yourself in those characters. Come on in. She was worried you wouldn't find it. No, that is not what anybody said. Okay, so how do we communicate effectively in theater? So I just started jotting things down during the presentation. And we're going to do a little bit of stuff, and you can kind of watch and if you're afraid to join along. So the first thing I found myself writing down fairly regularly is projection, right? So we have a saying that sounds very, very harsh that my students know very well, and that is, if I cannot hear you and I cannot understand you, then sit down. Because the whole purpose of being on stage is telling a story, and if nobody can hear or understand the story you're telling, you're not telling it. You're not doing your job. And there's a lot of things that we have to do in theater, trust me. But one thing we for sure have to do is we have to project. And that goes beyond vocal projection, and that goes into projection of self. So the different styles of acting from film, you know, to theater, and even if you move beyond to reader's theater and radio drama and children's theater, you have to be able to express correctly to what is happening. Come on in. Join us. How are you?
We want to make a scene.
Oh, good for you. We love a good scene. But no, projection is incredibly important. So I want everybody to just kind of sit up straight, put your feet on the floor, nice and flat. And I just want you to breathe for a minute. Just breathe. If we want to make sound, there's a few things we need. Mainly, we need air. You cannot make sound without air. So we have to breathe. And don't hold your breath up here, right? Your breath comes from down here, but just breathe for a minute. Just feel the mechanics of breathing, okay? You should feel nice and relaxed. Nobody go to sleep on me. Kind of thing. And as you breathe, I want you to think about your breath coming from lower and lower and lower in your body. We spent almost an hour on this in an acting one class. Maybe it was acting two, I don't remember. But like the goal, practitioners will tell you, is to imagine your breath coming from your feet all the way up, you know, to fill your body. We need air. Right? Have you ever been talking and you're talking? When you're out of air, there's no more sound. It's not coming through those vocal cords. It's not doing its thing. So what I always tell my students is the goal, right? Because like, you know, you're like, I'm breathing from my feet. What's wrong with this lady? Is to think of your breath coming from your knees. Like when you're standing up, you want that breath to feel. And if you can kind of straw it, do you know what I mean? Like imagine that you're breathing through a straw. You can just really feel it come all the way up. Now, I understand that you're not actually getting air from your knees. Okay, before anybody panics and they're like, why does she think air comes from my knees? But this is where it starts. The bigger the breath and the more air you have, the easier it is to let it flow out of you. And again, the danger is if you hold your air in your chest, I'm just going to scream like this and it's very uncomfortable, right? So we don't want to do that. Nobody wants to be yelled at in any scenario. And it's important to remember that projection is not yelling. For any of you that have little ones in competition, and you're like, those little lungs can't do it. Well, I've heard babies cry. Those little lungs can do it. They can be loud. So remember, don't let there be excuses. So everything is coming from down here. And I always tell people, if you're struggling figuring out where that projection sound comes from, try to pick up something heavy, right? And you have this sense, this isn't very heavy, but I can pretend, I'll act. But if you pick up something heavy and you're like, ugh! Right? And it's that kind of low, it doesn't hurt to make that sound. Everything is very free, it's very guttural, and it just comes right out of you very naturally, right? So think about it, like, you know, we've all watched videos of like guys at the gym, they're like, ah, you know, doing their thing, which, you know. Agreed, yes, that was perfect, good job. Thank you so much. So we wanna think about that projection. Coming, so you've got to have air, and you have to have an open mouth, right? People are very afraid to open their mouths. I don't know why. We've all got things to say. And this is true for music as well as theater, but you see people and they're like, I love you, Jesus. Jesus. And it's like they have a great sound. They're on pitch. If they would just open that mouth, everything would change. You know all about that kind of stuff. This is like your wheelhouse over here. You and Beth, this is like, you're like, yes, open your mouth. You've got to open your mouth. I make my students, we haven't done this in a long time, but remember Wide Mouth Frog? We used to do all the time, and we'd go, I am a wide mouth frog. And you look ridiculous. You absolutely look ridiculous. But the more you go over the top, it's easy to counter back. And that's what you want to kind of teach your kids to do. It's so much easier. I've even bought you cookies before, right? I was like, if I can tell you that was too far, I'll go to the snack shop and buy you all cookies. It's so much easier to scale someone down than push them up. So you want them to shoot for here. And same thing in singing, right? You don't want to reach up to a note. You want to drop down to a note. And it's that same thing. So we want to project our voices. Things we do on a regular basis to work on projection, other than breathing, right? You really want to breathe. But we also do things like sirens, right? Have you guys done sirens before? Where I'm really going to throw out your microphone, and I apologize. But, you know, we just do things to kind of warm everything up, where we're going, ooh, right? And you really kind of feel that as you move and you open that mouth, everything comes out more. And we'll do them on lip buzzes. And on R rolls. Unless you can't roll your R's. And then they still get to do a lip buzz. You know, we always have some, who is it? Yeah, you guys. I know there's somebody who's always still going. But the thing is, when you project a lot, you shouldn't get hoarse. Okay? If you're projecting correctly, you shouldn't get hoarse. If your voice is hurting, if your vocal cords are hurting, you need to step back and you need to reevaluate. You need to go back to breathing. You need to go back to opening your mouth. You need to go back to relaxing those shoulders. So when we do breathing exercises at Welch, I always say, shake your shoulders. Shake your shoulders, because it's the tendency. Like, you can see it. Coaches, you're going to see it directly in your students. People hold tension in their collarbone. You know, we think of jaw tension a lot, and jaw tension is real. More in singing, I think, in theater. In theater, I find that people are holding it right here because they're trying to project from this box instead of this box. So that's just like visuals. Suck in through that straw, breathe in from your knees. Such a weird statement, I know. People look at me. You all are used to my craziness, but everybody else isn't. Projection goes beyond projection of voice. And it moves into, for theater, projection of self. This is a harder one. a lot of times, the way Welch is set up, we have a balcony. And so sometimes I will say, you're aiming for the top of that balcony, vocally and physically. Because if you all are far away from me and I talk like this, first of all, I think I probably look pretty dumb. Do I look pretty dumb with my hands here? But people, like, they're like, I want to move. I want to move. Like, I really want to move. And I think I should move, but I don't know how to move. Right? So we want to learn. So, like, in preaching, they talk about, you have a box, right? In life, you have this little box. And when I'm talking to people normally, I'm probably talking in my box. Not me. I think I'm always, like, projecting. I'm loud. I'm like this all the time. But I think it's because I got so used to training myself to do it, I can't scale back. But people kind of hold here, right? You don't want to move. It feels awkward. What do I do with my hands? Right? How many times have I heard, what do I do with my hands? You've got to get out of your box, right? So, and think about it. If I'm right here and I'm talking to you, this isn't such a big deal. You understand? But if I'm, you know, 40 feet away from you and I'm talking like this, it feels like something is wrong, right? Do you see that? Like, so we have to get out of this concept of, well, nobody talks like this. Like nobody's doing this. But you have to, or it doesn't read. It's the same thing with your face. And here's where things get used to doing that and learn to scale back. Because The really, really, really hard part of projection of self is learning to be natural within being large. So if you were in a movie and the camera was right here on Grace and she's like doing this, it's not gonna look right, is it? But if I'm in an auditorium of 1,000 people, no one back there is going to know what happens. Abby and I spent a shocking amount of money to go see Lion King a few months ago. And we had very good seats, which is why we spent a lot of money. Abby had never seen it before. We splurged. We went to see Lion King. If we had been in the top row of TPAC, which is the Tennessee Performing Arts Center, we would have gotten nothing. Absolutely nothing. And the people at the top deserve the same show as the people at the bottom, right? So it's learning that I'm not playing to the front row. I'm playing to the back, and everybody is going to get the same show that way. So it's very important, projection of self. Please project yourself. Thoughts, feelings, ways to do that that you found. Anybody, please jump in. Talk to me. I love it when people talk to me. I'm an extrovert. Got my little introvert corner. Oh, go ahead.
I just try to imagine that there's one person I'm trying to talk to, but they didn't get up front.
Yeah, that's a lovely way to do it. That's a lovely way. Remember, I tell my students, this is kind of funny, my dad has hearing aids. And as the day goes on, the batteries wear down. And every now and then Dale comes to a rehearsal with me. You know, I have bring your Dale to work days. And so he'll come hang out with me. And my dad has some health problems, so sometimes he's with me. And if he comes to a rehearsal, I always tell them, hashtag do it for Dale, right? If Dale can't hear you, then when I drive Dale home, that's all I'm gonna hear. I'm sure they did a great job, but I didn't hear a thing that went on. And I can tell when he can't hear them. If you know people who wear hearing aids and have hearing problems, they just check out. They don't bother anymore. It's too difficult to concentrate in on what people are doing if you cannot hear them. It's frustrating. It's frustrating to me to go to a play and have no idea what people are saying. I don't wear hearing aids, but sometimes sound doesn't get to me either. And so rather than just really work to listen, you just check out. Like, I'm making grocery lists in my brain. I'm doing other things. And let's go back to the fact, if we believe in theater, if we believe in the power of story, we have to be heard. We have to get our information to people. And people aren't going to come to you. You have to get to them. Once you get to them and you really, really own what you're doing, then they'll lean into you. But it is your job. Have you ever heard people say, wow, that crowd was awesome. They were really feeding us, right? Wrong. You're feeding them. They have to take your energy. Guess what, guys? It's exhausting. It's a lovely exhaustion. It is a wonderful, there's nothing I love more than being absolutely spent after performing. I'm also weirdly hyper and giddy, but also physically and emotionally exhausted. But you've got to get this powerful message to other people. Projection isn't just something we do. It's just not something our coaches say, project, project, I can't hear you, I can't hear you. No, this is a big deal. If they cannot hear you, if they cannot understand you, get off the stage. Harsh reality. Truth. Right? And I even tell my kids, even get microphones in their musical productions and things like that. But what do I say about microphones?
Don't depend on the microphone.
You don't depend on the microphone. It is your job to project, and the microphone will be a supplemental piece. So, okay, what else did I see? I have to look at my little list I made. Any questions about projection? No? We're good? Good, good, good. Okay, fourth wall. Do you guys know what the fourth wall is? You know about the fourth wall. Okay, Anna, what's the fourth wall?
So when you're on stage, your back is to this wall, and you have these walls, and your audience is right here, they don't exist to you as a character.
They do
that's
not
the
exist.
Wall of like the room that you're in. So you can't be looking at them.
Can't be looking at them. Imagine if you're watching TV and you're in the middle of a scene and I have no movies in my brain. Anybody help me? The Wizard of Oz. Right? I just can't, like, I got no movies in my brain. The Wizard of Oz, and the witch is like, I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too. And they just, like, look out into the TV, and you're, they're staring at you all of a sudden. And you're like, what? What are you doing? I'm not here. I'm not here. You're there. Like, this is a whole different thing going on where I don't exist. Now, caveat. A lot of the plays for Vertical 3 are monologues or things where you need, it's okay. If I'm telling a story, I need to look at people. It's gotta happen. It's okay. Those are the moments where that fourth wall is broken, where a fourth wall doesn't exist because it's a presentational style of theater. Okay, so let's understand the difference. But let's say you're doing a monologue and you're talking to God. Well, don't look at me, I'm not God. You know, like, well, I'm uncomfortable, right? Because you're still separate for me now. So you have to get really used to it. And I'm gonna tell you what, easy peasy in a dark auditorium with stage lights, because you can't see anybody anyway. All you're getting are these like weird honeycombs in your eyes, and you don't know, you can't even see the people you're on stage with at that point. Like, you have to kind of like prep yourself. In a room for competition where all the lights are, I hate that they do that. All the lights are on, the judges are right here in your face. It is very, very hard. Fourth wall is absolutely essential to the play living in its own world and coming to life. The second you look at me, the second you invite me into that world, my willing suspension of disbelief crashes, just absolutely crumbles to the floor. Because now I'm like, oh yeah, this is fake. We don't want them to think it's fake. We want, and I'll get to that in just a minute. This is real. It has to be real to be powerful. It's fourth wall. I wrote fourth wall more times. Have you ever been to a play and somebody's looked at you? It feels weird, right? Like, I tell them, I'm like, don't look at me. It's creepy. It's creepy. Keep your world up there and let me keep my world back here. I want to get lost in your world. But if I'm reminded my world exists, it's gone. And boy, let me just say this. Rabbit. Chasing a rabbit. Every play you do is not specifically based on a Bible verse. Okay, right? We do Tuck Everlasting and The Wizard of Oz and things like that. But we still do things that are good. We still do things that are uplifting and positive. And sometimes the greatest gift we can give to people in a moment is to escape all the problems and things they're dealing with and allow them to just find themselves in another world. Sometimes the greatest thing we can do for people is allow them to see themselves and their own situations in someone else, and it helps them process and feel it through. Sometimes the best thing we can do is allow people to see those situations and be empathetic so that when they leave that theater, they give more grace and mercy and kindness and love to others. We need this world to exist separate than us, or else people aren't gonna learn. They're not going to gain that love and kindness that is necessary. It's so easy for me to walk around and say, I need to love people, I need to be the light of Christ. I know that in my head. Right? I know that fully in my head. I know it in my heart. But how quickly that leaves my mind when I'm dealing with someone that I don't want to deal with, when I'm dealing with someone who annoys me. But then I watch a play, I watch a movie. My favorite play in the entire world is Our Town. And it's my favorite play because every time I watch it, it reminds me to be better about paying attention to life, to be better about savoring moments with people, about enjoying the beautiful creation that God has given us, and not just like go along, head down, my busy life, you know, focus on me. Theater is powerful. We need that world to exist so that we can all grow and learn, whether it's a religious play or just a play that's uplifting and leads to truth. So, any questions about fourth wall and how to do it?
I just have a comment.
Yeah.
I know when I work with my kids at church that it'll break character.
Yes.
When they
it does.
At something else other than the person they are in communication with, and then it'll mess that person.
You are 100% correct. And we do have, that's coming. I'm so glad you mentioned it because that might actually be next on the list. Is that if you as an actor are aware of them, then you're not living in the world of the play. Let's see what I have next so that I don't jump around like I shouldn't. Jump around. Cut spaces between the lines. We're not gonna talk about this one much, but this was just something that popped up a lot. Conversation doesn't have massive spaces between it. If I said, "Hi, Abby, how are you?"
"I'm doing great, how are you?"
"I'm doing very well, thank you for asking." Okay, that's not how conversation works. So one of the things, and we're just gonna touch on this one briefly, is you really want to teach your actors to cut the spaces between the lines. Don't speed up the lines themselves. This is where things get tricky, but get rid of the dead space between, because it's just more natural. It just feels more natural. And of course, remember, you know, we're trying to portray life in a very natural way. So we want to get rid of those spaces. One of the ways that I've helped students get rid of spaces in the past is we do different counting exercises. We'll count 1, 2, 3, 4, but I don't let them go 1, 2, 3. You know, we're listening, and then sometimes we really change it up. Like we go, on every multiple of 5, you have to say bop instead of a number. And so that puts your brain active into listening mode, which it should be in listening mode on stage. You shouldn't just kind of like go on rote. You're listening all the time and still be able to respond. So you're going to get frustrated the first time you have people do this, and they're going to get frustrated because they are minor college students who can count to 100. You know, like they all passed, they all got good grades on that ACT, but then we go 1, 2, 3, 4, bop, 5, 6, 7, no, 6, 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, it just gets wild, right? But it is a good way to teach how to listen and then how to start working to cut those spaces. All right, that's a very small one, but it is important. If you ever watch a play and you think, the actors are really good. I like, oh no, the phone fell. The actors are very good. Everything is like, the sets are nice. Why am I not fully enjoying this? It's usually because it is just moving slow. Like they are dragging it, the flow is bad, and flow usually comes down to that space between the lines. It not every time, but generally that's what happens. Okay, stay in character. You have a character, you've got to be that character. So here's the thing, acting is fully existing in an imaginary world as someone else. It's not pretending, it's not faking, it is fully existing. That is hard. That is exhausting. It takes work. But I see a lot, especially as students are in their early phases, where they're like, this is my line and I'm talking about it and I'm very animated and I'm projecting. It's back to my line, and I'm back in character. Now it's my line again, and I'm going to talk, right? But it's just like, it's like I'm gone. The whole thing about acting is that you're fully existing. We call this lots of different things, but one of the things my students know is I say shared experience. Shared experience. You are always your character, they are always their character, and you are experiencing this together. Even in real life, we zone out. We really do, but we don't stop being ourselves, right? We're still us. And so you can't zone out unless your character is supposed to zone out. So at all times, you are being this person, no matter what. And I hit the nail on the head. You're looking at the audience. Are you being your character? No. And where's your brain? Your brain is back to, oh my gosh, there's people here. They're looking at me. Wonder how I'm doing. Do they like what's going on? Where are we? Oh no, where are we? Where are we? Where are we? Where are we? You know, that's that fear of where are we. Have you all experienced that fear before? Like, oh no, what's happening? I zoned out. Where are we in the play, right? No, you have gotten, it is exhausting. It takes so much mental work to stay in. I see this a lot in monologues as people are moving from new phrase to new phrase. You see that. What comes next? What comes next, right? That's sort of like I'm checking out. I see it a lot when it's group dramas and there's three people talking and let's say person three has a little bit before there's lines. They're gone. They are absolutely gone. And sometimes they're listening to the person, but they just forget stage presence. They just forget fourth wall and they just forget to live as that character. And I do have living as the character as one of the things. So what does it take my children or you all to stay in character all the time? What does it take? It takes world building. Okay. What else does it take? And we'll hit world building in just a second. What else does it take? Know your character intimately. What else does it take? Being mentally present. It is mentally exhaustion and it takes an extreme amount of focus. Whether you did a 5-minute skit or a 3-hour play, it is mentally exhausting. Being someone else is hard. It's hard work. How do we be someone else? What do we do? You have to know that someone else. In so many ways, theater is psychology. You kind of look back and you do this whole character analysis. Who am I? Where am I? Why am I? You've heard the what's my motivation, right? What do I want? What do I want as a character? What has brought me to this point in life? Every single one of us are different. Everybody in this room is different. It's lovely. It's a wonderful thing. We're all different. Why are we all different? Because we all have different experiences. We all have different childhoods, backgrounds, things that have happened to us, studies, experiences. Every single one of those things creates the person we are currently. So whatever has happened in life to create Anna G is not whatever has happened in life to create any of the people I have played before. Right? They have a different set of experiences. Acting is reacting. It's reacting to what people are saying to you, right? It's reacting to the dialogue. It's reacting to the situation, but it's also reacting to everything that has made me. Why do some people have road rage and some people don't? It's a reaction to who you are, right? Some of us are just more aggressive than other people. And so one of the things I always teach my students is, what's your favorite color? What's your favorite color, Grace? Aqua?
Yeah.
Aqua, why?
I just like how unique it is.
It's unique?
Blue, but not also green.
Oh, it's a little mixture. Yeah. It's a little exciting, keeps us guessing. Is it blue, is it green, right? So what about the daughter of Satan? What do you think her favorite color is? I mean, I assume you didn't grow up with Satan as a dad. And I'm just going to throw that out there where we curse in this house. So obviously, Grace's experiences and the daughter's experiences are very different. So what do you think her favorite color would be? So she's moving from like fire and passion to joy,
yeah.
Right? So obviously it's a different color because it's a different person. That's a really silly way of kind of helping your students change their thought process, but it's actually a very helpful way. Because I think that we love colors. I'm not the daughter of Satan, but red is my favorite color. for a very different reason than that. I love the color red. I think it is bright and present without being obnoxious. I think that it is bold, it's powerful, but again, it's not like neon where it's like, I'm here, right? Which is how I personally feel about neon. No offense to anybody whose favorite color is neon. So we kind of understand. I mean, when we're little, we're like, oh, I like pink and I love pink and pink is pretty. And that's okay. Pretty is a good reason. Why are we drawn to things that are pretty, right? What does that say about our personality type? But the more we can figure out little things to change our brain. And I will be honest with you, the hardest characters for a lot of people to play are characters just like themselves. And sometimes people just want to play those characters because it's easy and we don't have to give it a lot of thought, but we're doing the character a disservice because even siblings aren't exactly the same. Take my brother, I mean, for instance. I adore my brother, but we are wildly different from each other. He's a principal and like this. I'm a little bit like that too, actually. But I am a delight. And I'm just kidding, I'm joking. I am a delight. No, I'm joking. But, and that's a statement he would never make about himself, like as a joke kind of thing. So we grew up in the same house. We had the same shared experience, but we came out two very different people because of the things we were involved in and the friends that we had. And so you've got to remember, you are not your character, especially when you're doing a monologue. It gets very hard there because it's very easy to be yourself and get up and do a monologue. But what's the content of your monologue saying? Break it down. It's work. It is work. To be an actor, it is work to really do this in a powerful and effective way. Okay, Abby mentioned world building. Tell me about world building. We kind of talked about character development.
So even if you know you have your own, like you're like, okay, this is my character, this is where I'm at. If you are that character and then you're sitting here and you're looking around and you're still completely in this room with that screen and those walls, it's hard to lock into who you are, where you are in that time. Mm-hmm. So you need to create the world around you. What's it smell like? What's it look like?
Taste it, yeah. Feel it, smell it, see it. You're exactly right, Abby. I want you to look at my coffee cup for just a minute. It's a coffee cup. Well, it's a plastic cup that had coffee at one point, so we'll call it a coffee cup. I want you to change it. In your minds, look at it. So many times in rehearsals, so many times in on stage, especially, you know, you're looking at this chair and it's supposed to be something else. So look at my coffee cup, and I want you to imagine that it's a little kitten just sitting there sleeping. Okay, just imagine. Imagination is so important. Just look at that coffee cup. In your mind, see it, hear it. Characters have attitudes to different things. I like kittens. I'm not a big cat person, but kittens are precious. You know, baby animals, super cute. Or you're like, I'm about to sneeze, right? Like, get this thing away from me. But I want you to see this kitten. What color is it? What do its little paws look like? It takes a lot of mental capacity to do this. And you're going, so it kind of moves into your mind. Now here's the deal. This is not Harry Potter where all of a sudden it like swirls up and it's a kitten and it's running around and playing. You still see the coffee cup, don't you? You see it, but your mind has to see something else. Your eyeballs see this, but your mind has to see something else. And when we world build, that's what we're doing. When I'm looking out here at like the mountains and Sound of Music, I see a wall. I really do. It's right there. But I have to internally see the mountains. This is what children do. They're so good at it. And if you stop a kid who's like on one of those little, it's got the little horse face and the, and you know, but it's just a stick kind of thing, and they're running around and they're doing their thing, and you're like, oh, what is that? And they're like, oh, it's a stick. They're aware. They're aware that this is not, you know, a real horse. But when they're moving with it, in their minds, it becomes that, right? So it's okay that we are aware this is a coffee cup, but in our hearts and our minds, it has to become the kitten, right? Which is very hard. Imagination is an actor's greatest tool. Use your imagination. I'm running out of time. We gotta move. I get a little too excited about all of these things. Acting is reacting, we hit that. Interrelationship, this simply means if we do a show together, right, and you are Charlie Brown and I'm Lucy, we're gonna play our characters, we're gonna do our thing, and we're gonna base those reactions and characters off of each other. And then 2 years later, you're Charlie Brown, but I get to play Lucy again. I should be a different Lucy because I have a new Charlie Brown. Same lines, same person, but whatever he created to build this character, whatever he created with the past, the feelings, the emotions that made Charlie Brown should change my response because this is that shared experience, interrelationship that we're going through with each other. Okay, last thing we're gonna talk about because this is really important and I don't wanna lose this. Emotions have to happen internally as well as externally. So at Welch, we teach the Stanislavski method of acting. And Stanislavski was all about reality, truth, genuineness. You become your character. You are that person for the time you are playing that person. It gets really weird. People start thinking about method acting. Get all that out of your brain. We're going back to Stanislavski before the American School of Art distorted what he said. Goodbye method acting. So you have to become. That goes back to character analysis. That goes back to world building. But if you just say, my character is happy, but you don't feel happy inside, you're not doing your job. If you go, so I do this thing to my mom all the time. It absolutely irritates her, but it's a joke we have where I'm laughing about something and she goes, this is serious. And I go, oh, let me put on my funeral face. Now tell me what's going on, right? And it makes her laugh and it's just being silly, but I'm not sad, nor am I being serious in that moment. And we have a tendency to do that. We kind of put on a color called happy, a color called sad, but we're not feeling happy and we're not feeling sad and we have to feel. I see a lot of students in competitions and at school and auditions where I'm projecting, I'm doing all of the things right, but you can tell that there's nothing behind the eyes. You can tell that there's no feeling that's bubbling up and building. The words will guide you. The character analysis will guide you, but we cannot fake. We have to get out of our minds that acting is faking it. Acting is being real. People know when we're being real and when we're not being real. We have to be real. That's how we powerfully communicate. I will actually call out Beth's daughter because she had this really lovely moment where I saw the emotion of what she was saying click inside of her. And those little tears started. And, you know, people think, oh, if you can cry, you're the best actor in the world. Listen, I could cry at 3 years old. I'd be like, Daddy, and start crying. You know, that it wasn't real. I just knew how to turn on tears. I knew how to tap into something very dangerous. And, but there's something different than happens when those emotions are real to you. People do things like say, well, I'm just gonna think about something sad and that's gonna make me sad. Or, why is your character sad? What is creating that hurt in their lives? Feel that as them. It's real to your character. And in that moment, it is real to you. make sure emotions are internal. Now, little side note, if we can feel it all day, but if we can't get it out, it doesn't count, right? So you have to feel it, but then you have to project it out. Okay, quick questions. They're telling me my time is up. Things you're just like, I don't know how to do this, help. You're experts now, all of you. You're gonna be perfect. Next year, I'm gonna come judge. I'm gonna be like, these people are good.
You can give us your cell phone number, right?
Yes, I will. I absolutely will. You can email me at any time or text me. My email address is agharris@welch.edu. And my cell phone number is 615-406-8319. And what I am asking for is, rather than judging, I would love to do a day on like Saturday or Sunday where I just sit with competitors and let them perform and get feedback before they go in and get judged. So maybe next year we'll get to do something like that, because I think that would be more helpful for me to actually get my hands on what you're doing. But please, also, if you're having struggles finding script, or if you find a script and you're like, is this a good script or a bad script? Send it to me. I am so happy to look over these things. Honestly, there's nothing more I want than all of your success.
Can we help our actors with being clear with our enunciation?
Diction exercises, all day long, all day long. It is the old school way to do it. You do the wow, 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 wow. You get your mouth ready. You do all the weird things. I'm a wide mouth frog. You make it too big. You make them hit those consonants. Consonants are what fix diction. Not your vowel sounds, your consonants. So you're going to do that. I make my kids go aluminum linoleum, aluminum linoleum, cinnamon synonym, synonym cinnamon. When I switch it, I always have a little brain death. We do things like... This is funny. I always make them say Free Will Baptist Bible College because it's the hardest thing on God's earth to say. And like, I had students tease me and say, are we going to go Welch, Welch? And I went, no, that's easy. Free Will Baptist Bible College. It's hard to say. And then we want consonants. Free Will Baptist Bible College. Usually they need to slow down. If you're stumbling over your words, you usually need to slow down and you need to focus on consonants. The most annoying thing I do to my students is wear a whistle, and every time I can't hear you, understand you, I just blow the whistle. You keep moving, I don't stop the play, they don't want to hear my whistle. A whistle is an annoying sound. So I will annoy you till you get it right. It's just like we have to commit, but yes, it is intentional. Elocution exercises. If you want to do the stick marbles in their mouths and make them say it and until you can understand them, and then when they pop the marbles out of their mouth, I'm sure people are like, we don't do that anymore, somebody might choke. But no, marshmallows are dangerous. They can stack up in your throat. Marshmallows are dangerous. Don't do it. You use fireballs? That's a good idea. They really want to get it right and get those fireballs out. All right, thank you guys for everything. I can be out in the hallway and talk if you all want to talk more, but Daniel Webster wants me to get out of his way. So you can teach your seminar.
How about you just take the next hour?
Oh, music to my ears. No, I hate it when class is over. Honestly, thank you guys so much. Thank you for understanding that theater is important. That is so special to me that as a denomination we are valuing something a little out of the box, but so beautiful and so honoring to God. Thank you guys so much.